Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
Good evening, gearheads. We are live in Austin, Texas. Still hungover from the Formula One United States Grand Prix.
Getting over it. Getting caught up.
This John Massengill. That was Les Kaiser. Jonathan Green is not in studio. He had to jump right on a plane and head to Macau. He's down there doing the Macau Grand Prix.
Let's not do that this year.
Our producer probably doesn't remember that clip of Mayhem is from Macau.
That's right.
And that's when they stacked up. It was maybe, was it 18 or 17? But anyway, they stacked up probably 30.
Pretty much the entire grid.
Yeah, the entire grid of GT cars, Ferraris and Lambos and Porsches and oh my. And it was a low-speed corner. It was a low-speed corner where, I mean, they all just kind of crashed into each other going like 30 miles an hour and just kept stepping. But it was a blind corner. Yep. If you haven't seen that clip, I think it's up to about 6 or 7 million
something
views of
ridiculous.
That. We should tweet that thing out.
Yeah, we'll get that out.
But that's where that came from. But that's where Jonathan is. But we're excited. We had a great show tonight, even though we are a little bit hungover from the Formula One Grand Prix being here in Austin a week ago. But we have a race driver on the show tonight. We got a guest. We have James Davison, IndyCar driver, NASCAR driver, sprint car driver. But he was here in Austin last week. And he showed up to our event just
cherry pick.
Yeah. He showed up to our esports event that we had in downtown Austin. He just saw it on Instagram or somewhere and just showed up and then got his butt kicked by a little 13-14 year old guy on the F1 game. So
we need to get that kid on and figure this out.
Well, he's going to be racing in the USF 4 series next year. He's just too young right now. So.
Nice.
But yeah, he cleaned up. I think we had about seven or eight races, and he won more than half of them. He probably won four or five of those.
Awesome.
We got James Davison coming on, but we also are going to talk all about the IndyCar acquisition by Penske. Man, did that come out of the blue or what? That was crazy. I had not heard anything.
Not even a rumor.
Not even a rumor. Not a whisper. Nothing. And so we're going to talk a lot about that. We've got some clips from that press conference if you didn't hear them. There's some really good stuff, and I have a new level of respect for the captain, for Roger Penske himself. I know he's the captain, but just listening to him, man, he came off like the speed and snap of a 35-year-old. I don't know how old he is now, but he's probably late 70s.
He's extremely business savvy, and I've always heard that. And you see the Penske name all over the place, even if you're not related to racing.
Oh, yeah.
I've known that. He had his fingers in a lot of things, and it's obviously now, it's more so now that he is certainly a solid brain behind that, not just that he knows good people.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk a lot about that here in a couple of segments, but let's talk about the United States Grand Prix, because it was a massive success.
I mean, it started early in the week. Crowds started showing up. Some of the restaurants I went to started getting crowded. Lots of folks coming in, getting messages, hey, where do I go tonight, all that kind of thing. It was fantastic. I mean, I got pinged more for directions and all of that, and even from the race teams. When they started showing up early, I went out and I went out with a couple of folks the Monday night of that week, and it was really cool that they're now getting here early to enjoy the area.
Well, so we heard about a month before from the ticket brokers that the tickets were selling big time. And then when the first day, we had all that anecdotal evidence you were talking about. And then on Friday, I looked out in the crowd and was like, that is a huge Friday crowd. And then I heard a little rumor that it was about 50,000 on Friday. And then Saturday was a massive crowd. I I don't remember. They did say, they said it was a record crowd for a Saturday. They didn't release the number, but they said it was a record crowd for a Saturday. And then Saturday afternoon, right after qualifying, they announced that Sunday was a sellout. That's the first time that's ever happened for Formula One on Sunday.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. And they even came back later and said Saturday officially sold out by the time qual took.
Yeah, they announced Saturday had sold out more than just a record crowd. Okay, wow.
So, yeah, that's spectacular for on a lot of avenues. Hey, we love it here in Austin, Texas. Love it that the audience has grown to come to the USGP. You know, I don't know what the mix and percentages are, where they came from. I love that that happened. It's been a slow crawl, it feels like, in our book. Although that, you know, business practice, that's normal.
Well, we feel like that because I think it's been a slow crawl for the Austin community to embrace Formula One, but not the rest of the country and the world. And in fact, speaking of the world, Bergstrom Airport announced that they set another record for a single day number of passengers going through the airport. And that was on Monday after the race. And I'm looking it up right now, but I think it was 31. Yeah, here it was. It was 31,000 and just almost 32,000 visitors on Monday. And that was a record that was set a month ago with ACL, but Formula One broke it. So
I'd like to see what some of these little private places did, private airports did around the area too, because you know the first year they were busy, and it wasn't as big as it was now.
Yeah.
This past weekend.
Well, I saw the usual helicopter business going pretty good up there by Lot T.
Yep. So, yeah, I saw that. That was great.
Yeah, lots of helicopters coming in and out. But yeah, it was a fantastic weekend for just from an economic side. And the racing, you know, after doing doing pre and post Formula One shows now nationally for 2 years, we're really honed into Formula One, right?
Absolutely.
And I realize just how good the racing here it is in Austin. It was really not the best race we've had, but it's good racing. COTA just gives good racing.
And it's a great spectator site as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, after going to Monaco and Spa and, you know, Zandvoort and floating around some, I really have a new appreciation for what we have here at COTA. And it's not just to blow the whistle and we're awesome because we're in Texas, but it's awesome.
But we'll take it.
Austin, Texas, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great racing, and you're right. How many people say, "Oh, I sat here and I felt like it was the best seat in the house," and then somebody else sat here, and you saw at the end of the race. Remember what happened? I think if you listen to the podcast after the post race podcast, I talked about this, but after the race, the entire front straight, not just right in front of the main grandstand, but when they let the crowd in for the track invasion.
Track invasion, yeah.
It was full from turn one to turn 20, the entire front straight. I mean, it was like just squeezed in room right in front of the podium, but there were people almost continuous from the bottom of the hill at turn one to turn 20. And so I'm wondering, because last year, COTA had 265 for the weekend, and that was, I think, fifth or sixth amongst all 20 races around the world. So if we push 300 this year, maybe, then maybe we're third or fourth largest Formula One event in the world. You know, for sure, top five, I would say.
You're right, that the post-race event was so cool to see the track invasion. One of the things I really enjoyed, you know, we were seeing some views out our commentating booth. There were some young kids that were probably 10, 12-ish, picking up little pieces of rubber and things off the track that, you know, the tire slag that comes out. They were picking those up and holding on to them, putting them in their pockets, doing all this kind of thing. I love that because that's somebody paying attention to something at that young age that they wanted it and they wanted to take it home for memory's sake.
Cool. I have my own.
Remember, what'd you do?
The first, not this weekend, but the very first time I went to the top of turn one. And they have all those little rocks. And I had some shoes that would gather rocks like that. And they stuck up inside there. And I've left them there. So that was from, 2012, early 2012. So I have my own little souvenir. Hey, I want to play a couple of clips because we had the chance to interview the boss, Chase Carey, CEO and executive chairman.
The stash.
Yeah, the stash. So he's the CEO and executive chairman of Formula One. And we just have a couple little clips because we played some of these during the post-race show, and we have a full podcast that we're going to put out.
You know, one of the things I've figured out with Chase, I've spoken to him at each of the races here and as I traveled, is he's very genuinely interested in your views of what's going on. And I found that refreshing. After you and I sat with Bernie, he would tell you what his views were, and that was enough.
Well, you know what? To be fair,
he got us here.
Well, no, to be fair, one of the questions that Bernie asked us when he got all the local media in that little room in 2012, he asked us, he said, what do you think of Formula One coming to Austin?
That's true.
So he did ask her, because I remember everybody was afraid to speak.
Yeah.
And I just spoke up and I said, well, I'm from Austin. For what some reason, the context was that. I said, I'm from Austin and I think it's amazing. Yeah. And he said, well, I'm from London and I think it's amazing or whatever.
So, yeah.
Anyway, he did ask us.
He asked us that, but I don't think he would ask us our thoughts about changes to implement. That's the message I'd say.
Here's a clip from Chase Carey about sustainability, because sustainability was one of the topics in the 2021 rules, which we're going to talk about later in the show, a lot about that. But let's hear what Chase Carey says about sustainability.
I mean, I think the environmental issue has really become, you know, very much a front and center issue for us. I think it's become clear, and I mean, realistically, just in the last few years, all you have to do is watch a news channel, watch the media, and see the degree to which in just general life, the environmental issue has become front and center. And I think it's made it clear to us in these last couple of years that, you know, that this is, you know, both, you know, something that's important to us and an opportunity for us. I mean, you know, and we haven't done it. We haven't put probably the focus on it we should. I mean, today we have the most efficient engine in the world. You know, we haven't done a good job, you know, telling that story. But, you know, more importantly, there's a lot we can do. And so we've made it a priority for us to have a plan short and long term to reduce and ultimately eliminate the environmental impact of our sport. You know, we're working with an array of partners that we can do that with. We think this is an important issue to everybody, and we can play a leadership role in it. I mean, our sport has always, you know, been at the forefront. In some ways, as the pinnacle of motorsports, we've been at the forefront for technologies that have changed safety in cars, changed technological capabilities in cars, you know, various ways to design and manage the electronics in cars have come out of our sport. And I think we can play an important role. And we do believe the combustion engine, you know, whether it's through fuels like synthetic fuels, ultimately hydrogen fuels, energy recapture and the like, is a critical part of the solution to how do you create an environmental world that everybody wants.
That was Chase Carey, of course, CEO of Formula One. And I cut it off right there. Actually, we went to our next question. But I found it interesting that he's talked about the internal combustion engine being a crucial part, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And that goes right into the Formula E discussion. Because you know how Formula E has the rights to an electric-only Grand Prix for I don't know how many years. It's some crazy number, like 50 years or 25 years or whatever. I just thought that was interesting. But it is. But didn't we fight that battle here in Austin when Formula One was announced? And Miami's dealing with that right now, right? But it's not the same because it's in the middle of their city. But we used to fight that battle about, well, why is Austin such a green city? Why would we want this? And we used to say, well, where do you think a lot of this green technology that's hitting automobiles is coming from? You know, a lot of people still don't even realize Formula One cars are hybrid cars and how much of that efficiency technology trickles down. But I wanted to play that clip. We've got a lot more from Chase Carey. We've got one or two more we'll play tonight.
And you know, we just had a question. If you're listening to us, we're also on Facebook. You can see our stream there, and we take input and comments from you. Gentleman asked, so can y'all handle 7 races in a row next year? I'm willing to give that a trade. You think that calendar will juggle up things
Man.
For us?
I know when they stack them up like that, that is tough. But we'll deal with it. We'll fight through it.
There's caffeine.
Like we're
you
like
a coffee company, and you want to sponsor Speed City.
like the guys who travel are laughing at us right now just because we have to get up early. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, Very excited. We have a race driver on the phone, James Davison. So we'll be back with James after these messages.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers, the best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built.
Ducati.
Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
At Circle Brewing, the belief is less is more when it comes to brewing a better beer. You won't find any chemicals or additives, only water, malt, hops, and yeast, and absolutely nothing else. Just simple ingredients and outstanding taste. It's German purity with Texas ingenuity. Find the brews on tap all over town, in your favorite store, or drop by the tap room at 2340 West Breaker Lane, open Thursday and Friday nights and weekends. Log on to CircleBrewing.com. Circle Brewing Company. Born, bred, and brewed in Texas.
Talk 13.7, the right choice.
So Andy Prio driving for Ford Chip Ganassi Racing, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, our next guest is joining us after meeting up with us here in Austin, after seeing a post we had on Instagram or somewhere about our esports event, because we had all, for the Formula One week, we did an event, and we got all the F4 drivers and a couple of F3 drivers, US F3, US F4, and we got them all down to Valhalla. It's this esports lounge in downtown Austin that has a whole rack of these really badass Alienware machines. They've got Xboxes and PS4s and all this stuff, but we had this event down there, and so the Indy 500 driver James Davison shows up and kicks a little butt, and also got his butt kicked a little bit too. So we want to welcome to the show James Davison. Hey, James, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. How are you?
Good. How was that event for you?
Yeah, it was good fun just playing with the younger drivers in motorsport in the Formula 4 series. And, you know, it doesn't seem too long ago that I was that age coming over to the States to chase the IndyCar dream and racing at the US Grand Prix at Montreal, well, in Indianapolis and Montreal, we did back to back. And it's just such an exciting time in your life and your career. And yeah, it was cool to just have some fun with those kids. And some of them I actually knew from doing a little bit of coaching in the USF 2000 series. So it was just a lot of fun.
Well, it was really fun, and we're going to do that up big next year, I think, and maybe team up with COTA or F1 or some, you know, try to make it big. But it was really fun watching you guys because Jonathan Green was commentating, as he so expertly does. He was commentating the race, all the races. I think we raced, I don't know, 6 or 8 races. But it was fun because you guys were able to yell across at each other, hey, quit pushing me off the track or running into me. So it was fun to watch y'all interacting with each other. And I really think this esports thing, I'm kind of tongue-in-cheek here, is going to catch on because obviously it's a multi-billion-dollar industry across first-person shooters and all those. But
James, do you game much yourself, or do you stick to the more serious simulations?
Yeah, like iRacing and so on, I do that. You know, this was F1 2019 on PlayStation with a controller.
Yeah.
So what we were doing. So next year, I highly recommend we get steering wheels.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was fun regardless. It made it really challenging, you know. Like, that's part of being a racing driver as well, is adapting to something and, you know, not just saying, oh, I didn't have as much time as he did, you know, whatever. You just got to get on with it. And so, yeah, as the grandfather of that group, you know, I had to just, you know, I did a lot less practice than those kids and all of that, but just, you know, had fun, and we all mixed it up and had a laugh, and that's what it was all about. So yeah, it's really come of age for those young drivers. It's another level from my generation. You know, if you're born in the mid 80s, you know, these kids now born in the mid 90s onwards, it's just it's revolutionized motorsport, how they're able to do so much practice and training before they actually get into the real life situation. And undoubtedly, that's why there's so many good young drivers, let's say in Formula One in particular, that are born in the late 90s, like Leclerc, Verstappen, George Russell, Albon, Lando, and I've probably forgotten a couple more as well, if it's Ocon.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a reason why that, and I'm very sure that it is because of this technology. And basically, if you don't do it, the other guy's doing it, and he's going to just refine his craft and the art of driving, how to use the steering wheel and brakes and pedals, and it all applies from the simulator to the real car. And sometimes even it's tougher on the simulator because it's more sensitive than it really would be in real life. But it's good, though, because it forces you to just get the fine details in your driving inputs down pat. And that's what makes up, you know, these huge lap times you see guys like Lewis Hamilton or Will Power throw down. It's all in the fine details. So, yeah, those kids have got something different than we had. And I think it's really showing dividends for them.
Well, James, I know you've done, the Indy 500, at least four times, something like that? You've been Indy Lights going up to IndyCar, NASCAR, IMSA, sprint cars even. And I can just imagine...
he's like the Chuck Norris of racing. He's done it all.
He's done it all. But talk about your career a little bit, James. I know I just touched on a lot of that.
Yeah, I came up in the Road to Indy series. I finished second in the Indy Lights Championship. I did it that year with like Hinchcliffe and J.R. Hildebrand, Charlie Kimball, to name a few of them. Ultimately, I didn't have the funding that is required to go to IndyCar. And I've just had to really fight for my piece of the pie. And, I've done five Indy 500s now and gotten further than I could have really ever dreamed. For what, you know, kind of financial resources were behind me and coming very far away from Australia. So out of that, it's also paved a path where I've driven so many different race cars and race series in IMSA, Pirelli World Challenge, NASCAR, IndyCar, Silver Crown, you know, sprint cars, one-offs like the Porsche Carrera Cup race at the Australian Grand Prix, driving a lot of historic cars because, there's obviously a fair bit of wealth in those paddocks, and you can drive some clients' beautiful old Formula One cars and so on. So I've found I raced at the British Grand Prix this year in a 1981 Mario Andretti Lotus that basically the owner wanted to sell the car and wanted to have, a young professional drive it and showcase its ability. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty awesome, huh, to be driving those kind of things. And maybe there's a possibility I do the historic Monaco Grand Prix next year, which should be just so bucket list.
If you do that, Jonathan's probably commentated. He did it last year. And James, I don't want you to sell yourself short. Five Indy 500s, dude, that's a pretty short list of people that have done that. But
hey, there are some big names that didn't make it to grid this year. So
yeah, absolutely.
Get into that. James, we have a question from our audience. Janet asks, what's your favorite racetrack that you've been on?
Oh, that's a good question.
We're not going to won't force you to say COTA.
No. I mean, I definitely like Austin a lot. I really do. Not just saying that. I've had success there. And when you get the lap right there, it's so rewarding because there's just so many corners that are trying to bring you down and trying to give you an opportunity to lose time. And especially once you've done the first two sectors very well, you can't just sit on your time. You've got to push the last sector extremely hard. That track design is I take my hat off to it if it was Herman Tilker or what have you, because it is so challenging and really great for the drivers. But to answer your question, it's Mount Panorama Bathurst. So that is our Indy 500 crown jewel event in Australia, the Bathurst 1000. And so I've done the Bathurst 12 hour, which is a sports car GT3 race. And it's just so unbelievable, the sensation and how that kind of public road going up and down a mountain and high-speed sweepers and blind drops when you start descending and the cambered corners, everything. It's just so Australian out in the bush, as we call it, in the woods, in the country. We have kangaroo problems there, and it's just... It's so cool. Like, I really, any driver that has an opportunity to drive Bathurst, I remember the first time I drove it, came in after a practice session, and just, I was on cloud nine. I just loved the sensation and challenge that that track gives you.
I would love to go to the Bathurst race.
I think that's a bucket list for Formula One drivers. I think a lot of people put that on their list. I think that there's a reason that it's not just your favorite. I think a lot of people love that racetrack. That race, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously in Europe, they've got the Nürburgring, which, I mean, when you watch, for any of the audience, if they really love race cars, I recommend they watch this Hunstuck video on YouTube. Just type in Hunstuck BMW BMW M3 GTR, and it's the lap of Huns, and I'm guessing he's in his late 50s or early 60s, 10 tenths in this old GT1 car around the Nürburgring, and, you know, that's the kind of stuff that a kid grows up watching and makes them want to be a race car driver.
Yeah. Well, I know that the Bathurst is a big one too, but well, so did you were here for our event, but obviously you were probably here for the Grand Prix out at COTA. Did you make it out there, I take?
Yeah. So I was racing in the Masters Endurance Legends race. So that was all the non-current LMP1, LMP2, Daytona prototype.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
GT, whatever you can think of. And it's a very good idea, that series, because they've given the owners of these cars a place, an arena to go race them. And especially if you're doing it at a Grand Prix weekend and with the sound of the, you know, screaming V12s and traction control kicking in and big loud V8s in the Daytona prototypes. It was the times that we were on the track at like 8 a.m. I thought there was a pretty good crowd turnout. I mean, I think they really appreciate race cars that make a lot of noise. So, yeah, I just did that. Basically, I had the sixth quickest car. I wasn't going to beat an Audi LMP1 car or a Pescarola with a Daytona prototype. And we finished there. So I was racing the car with a gentleman driver that owned it. And, yeah, had some of my Indy 500 sponsors involved as well, just, you know, coming, putting their logo on the car and enjoying an F1 race for the first time. So it was cool. It's always fun when you get to drive a race car, especially when it's not a super serious race and you can just more soak it up and enjoy the pure part of the sport rather than all the pressure that kind of can overshadow the enjoyment sometimes.
Yeah.
So these kind of weekends are a lot of fun. You know, there was no one out there that had the same car as each other. So it wasn't like, oh, you know, I'm quicker than you, or God, I need to find a couple of tents. You know, you just did your thing and had fun.
Yeah, I worked with Bob Constanduras and we all kind of took our turns on those. And I absolutely love the history that is on track together at that time and sharing it. And you know, we probably narrowly missed each other in the paddock back there because I loved going back there and going through the paddock and talking to the drivers, getting the story, what's going on with it, how original it is or what's been changed.
Yeah.
And just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, especially the historic F1 cars that were there as well. And I did that race 3 years ago in a Riccardo Patrese 1978 Arrows, the gold car with the Warsteiner sponsorship on it. And yeah, that was just a blast, like same as the British Grand Prix, like getting to drive late 70s H Patton F1 cars on a Grand Prix weekend is pretty special. You know, there's a lot of history with those cars, the John Player special cars.
Oh, yeah.
There's some people, you know, own Villeneuve cars and Lauda cars and Andretti's. It's, I love that part of the sport. And I had my family, you know, I'm third generation, so I can really appreciate it quite a lot.
So I got to ask you this. You talk about not as much pressure as trying to find that last tenth, but what about the pressure of driving a car that could be worth, oh my gosh, money? I don't, you know, some of those cars you see sell for like $10 million. So what about that pressure?
Yeah, I mean, one of the guys that I've been driving some of these beautiful cars, probably the top one I drove was a 1978 Gilles Villeneuve Ferrari 312 T3, and I know that that was probably worth $4 million or what have you. But to be honest, when you get enough experience driving race cars, it's kind of just walking. You know how to use the pedals. You know not to push too hard, especially when it's a historic car. I mean, believe me, I have a go in those cars and find the limit on throttle and under braking and laterally and everything. But you've got to just drive it, let's say 8/9 tenths, and you can get hurt in those cars as well.
Yeah,
so to be honest, that goes probably before anything what the car's worth. You're like, I don't want to get hurt in these cars with the aluminum tubs and the fuel cells either side of you. You know, those 70s cars killed those drivers, and they do still kill drivers today that drive them. So
yeah,
you got to just use your head. It's as simple as that.
You bet. And like I said, it's so neat to go back there and see the advancement of technology through the non-ground effects to the ground effects era, and all the changes. But fantastic.
Well, James Davison, we thank you so much for coming on the show. And we're going to call you next year before our esports event, and you can be our consultant. And we're going to set this thing up right with serious pedals and wheels and get it done right. So next year it'll be even cooler than this year.
Very good. Very good. I'll be there.
All righty.
All right. James Davison, thanks a lot, buddy. And good luck in the rest of the year. And we'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it. See you guys.
You bet.
All right, well, let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back after these messages.
Winding Road Racing is your first and best choice for all the essentials for a great weekend at the track. We're racers, and we love helping racers. With a full selection of racing gear in stock, get geared up with all the safety equipment needed to meet all the latest Snell, FIA, and SFI regulations. Outfit your car with a comprehensive lineup of racing necessities, and when you need to find a few more tents, turn to data acquisition systems from AIM Sports, V-Box, and others. Austin-based with shops in California, Georgia, and Kentucky, the source for all your racing needs. Winding Road Racing, windingroadracing.com.
When you're looking for traditional Tex-Mex, look no further than an Austin favorite, One in a Million. Serving original family recipes since 1980 and located just minutes from downtown at 2300 East Cesar Chavez, One in a Million has your Tex-Mex fix every day of the week from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Breakfast is served all day. Homemade migas, enchiladas, and menudo. And try the Don Juan taco. Some say it's big enough to feed a family of four. One in a Million. Online at oneinamillion.com.
Talk 1370. The right choice.
Hello, I'm Felipe Massa, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio. Speed City.
All right, welcome back to the show. We are going to jump into some IndyCar, but later in the show, we're going to have some clips, a clip from Will Buxton, who was at Winding Road Racing this weekend.
Oh, that was, yeah.
This past weekend, the past week, I should say, before the Grand Prix.
It was, while y'all were down on 6th Street racing cars, we were learning a lot of history. It was really cool.
Yeah, and we want to thank Winding Road for sponsoring as well, the new sponsor for us. But let's talk some IndyCar, because they dropped a bomb this week, man.
Oh, that was huge.
And I saw that hit Twitter, and I was like, wait a minute, what? And so the Penske Corporation bought the IMS, Indy Motor Speedway, and IMS Productions. And it was it was completely out of the blue. I think we mentioned this earlier in the show, but it was completely out of the blue. I don't think anybody knew. It was probably the best-kept secret for such a massive change. I mean, it almost reminded me of the Liberty Media buy of a Formula One. It's not as many dollars.
Sure.
I saw somebody talking about the calculations. I mean, it was probably less than $1 billion exchange, but still, in our world, massive.
I think the George family is going to be okay.
Yeah.
They're going to survive just fine. But Penske, I mean, think about the impact of this. Obviously he is a huge player in the IndyCar series, business-wise. He's, obviously successful at doing it. His companies, the trucking companies, all these different companies he's got tied to it. So I'm really interested in seeing how it plays out. As you said earlier, he is sharp. You can hear he's sharp when he's speaking. And so he's definitely still very integral to the Penske business and the Penske world himself.
Yeah, well, obviously he's a sharp guy, man. He's got an empire, really, that he's built with all the different Penske products and companies and everything. But it was really a complete out of the blue and such a massive thing. And I feel, I don't know about you, but I feel that this is a great move. I feel that it couldn't be in better hands. And I think it's fantastic. But I got a couple of clips that we have that I want to play. And in fact, the first one is from Tony Holman, who's, you know, the Holman family, that the current owners until they actually close the deal. But let's go ahead and play this first clip from Tony Holman.
But now this one is extra special because to all of us, because we've all grown up around it. Nancy and I, anyway, we came home from the hospital to a home just right down the street here. So we've literally grown up around it. Our kids and grandkids have done the same. So bittersweet, but very exciting for us because we know that we're passing the torch to an individual who has created an organization that is not only dynamic, but it's ideally suited, I think, to take over this stewardship. A corporation that is family involved, much like ours, but with a track record that is really without compare. So we're very excited to be in a place where, you know, our process took us to a point where we as a family all agreed we needed to have a conversation with Roger Penske. And so I approached him at the final race of the season, not wanting to distract from the task at hand, which was bringing home another championship, but I wanted to wish him well on the grid, and I just simply said that I'd like to meet with him and talk about stewardship. He got a very serious look on his face, and followed up after he clinched this championship with an email and then another email the next morning, and we set it up. I invited Mark to join us for that meeting, and kudos to both organizations who worked very closely together, very quickly. It was a pretty easy, not easy by any means, but this isn't their first rodeo, or your first rodeo.
Well, as you can tell, he was pretty emotional, and rightfully so. But did you hear how quickly they didn't? He didn't approach them. So obviously, the Holman family approached the Penske team
right
after the season. That's how quickly this thing all went down.
I think that's I think that's phenomenal, and the fact that it moved so fast. I'm going to say there's a lot of trust.
Yes.
And what they had built.
Yes. And really good point.
You don't move that quickly in that kind of that size of business unless there's a lot of trust with somebody already and you have faith in their vision and their management.
Yeah, and all that trust because they've worked together for years. In fact, that's a good segue. I want to play another clip about this one is Roger Penske and because you talk about trust, and you know, because there could be a conflict of interest here, obviously. But if you notice, yeah. Roger said he was going to step down from the running the race team, and he's going to be, you know, running the organization. But let's play this clip from Roger Penske. All right, so. All right, well, we're gonna come back to that one. So, but
dealing with mayhem, I think.
I think.
But no, you're right. Imagine the state if you were an integral player, you know, down on pit lane with your team and everything, and now you're in charge of the whole environment. That's a big change, and there's got to be a lot of trust.
Yeah, absolutely. It has to have a huge amount of trust. But this clip is the one we want to play is the conflict of interest from Roger Penske. So do we have that one ready? Yeah, we got it. Let's play Roger Penske.
Well, I think the as you look at the construct as we go forward, you know, well, the sanctioning body and the IRL will be a separate company, and the other assets will be in the Speedway. And I think with the proper board, and I think you have to ask our competitors at this point, you know, Tony's been a car owner. We were talking about it today. I think Tony has said that all along, you know, Wilbur Shaw, Eddie Rickenbacker been drivers. So there's been some history, but I don't want to leave this conversation without knowing that I understand the integrity, and there's got to be a bright line. And to me, I know what my job is, and hopefully I've got enough credibility with everyone that we can be sure that that is not a conflict. And I'll do my very best to be sure that isn't. And if you think it is, I hope that I know that you folks will tell me pretty quick. So I've got a lot of guys watching me.
Yeah, you know what? I feel comfortable with it. I want to be paranoid, but I feel comfortable with that. So I think it's fine.
I think this, you know, to parallel it is, you know, Zach Brown, Russ Braun. Think of guys like those in the Formula One world who have made a drastic change from administration to team or the opposite direction. There has to be a lot of trust in their integrity, how they're going to use their prior knowledge, whichever direction they came, from the administration to the team or vice versa.
Well, I want to play another clip from Roger Penske, because he's got some interesting plans for IMS, and including, he said, the F1 word in the middle of these. So let's hear from Roger Penske on plans for IMS.
Sit down with the existing team and get their top 10. I always like to work from a top 10 and see the things that we can do to make it fan-friendly. Certainly from a competitive perspective, I'm planning to really step down from being a strategist on the pit box. You won't see me there on race day. I think I've got a bigger job to do now, is to try to see how we can build a series to the next level. It would be nice to bring another car manufacturer in. I know Jay Fry is working on that. Can we have someone else come in to join the series? What can we use this for? Can we run a 24-hour race here? Can we run a Formula One race here? You know, what are the things that we can do? This is a great asset. And, you know, once the tradition had been broken, and adding the NASCAR race, which obviously we're going to get behind that in a big way, because for 27 years they've run here. So I look at all of these across the board to see, you know, what can we do? This business is not broken. This is a great business. And the leadership team that's been here has done an outstanding job. And what we want to do is be a support tool. You know, we bought Michigan Speedway in 1973. It was bankrupt. You know, we built California. You know, we're running the Grand Prix, or helped present the Grand Prix in Detroit. So this is in our DNA. And I think that with input from the media, certainly input from our sponsor partners, and all the teams, I had a chance to talk to most of the teams today, the principals, and we're looking forward to getting together with the car owners and seeing what we can do to make IndyCar even stronger. And I think that's something that would be a priority for me.
You know, he said it's not broken. I mean, yeah, I don't think of that at all. Look how well IndyCar is doing as a series, and IMS, I mean, it's certainly not broken.
No, I'll admit, 10 years ago, I was a bit bored with it, but it is definitely livened up and come back in.
Dramatically.
I love the personalities that are in it.
Yep.
I love the tracks they go to. I love the advancement, and I do. I think 82-year-old captain's going to do fine there.
Yep. Well, you might have heard a phone call coming in during the middle of that interview, and I think that was Jonathan. And we're going to go to a break and see if we can get him connected in from halfway around the globe, which is always hard to do, but he's over at Macau. So stick with us through the break, and we'll get Jonathan and get an update from Macau. You're listening to Speed City live from Austin, Texas. Back after these messages.
Circle Brewing, the belief is less is more when it comes to brewing a better beer. You won't find any chemicals or additives, only water, malt, hops, and yeast, and absolutely nothing else. Just simple ingredients and outstanding taste. It's German purity with Texas ingenuity.
Find the Brews on Tap all over town, in your favorite store, or drop by the tap room at 2340 West Breaker Lane, open Thursday and Friday nights and weekends. Log on to CircleBrewing.com. Circle Brewing Company, born, bred, and brewed in Texas.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers, the best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Talk 1370.
Jenny Gow from BBC F1. You are listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, we are going to try to talk to Jonathan Green. He's halfway around the world getting ready for the Macau Grand Prix in China.
Oh, mayhem!
Yeah, in case we don't, we've got that.
We've got that's our backup. So, all right, hey, Jonathan Green, can you hear us, buddy?
Oh, no!
Yep, that's
he,
him.
He can hear us. How's it going, man?
Good, man. How you guys?
We're good. We're still hungover from the Grand Prix here in Austin. I can't even imagine you getting on an airplane the following day and going half around the globe and getting to work behind the microphone in Macau.
Yeah, I have to be honest. I got here early because I am a bit left-handed. So to speak, and I've got a few days off before I get going, but I've just started my research, and I'm going to go and walk the track today because it's a big weekend this year because we've got F3, but of course F3 is now FIA3, which is the old GP3. So we've had to modify the circuit to FIA grade 2. And when you know it's a street circuit, there's not a lot of modifying you could do. So I'm here early to check out the track and, again, we've got a really, really good, strong field of youngsters coming up,
well,
including an American.
Yeah, that's right. Logan Sargeant, FIA Formula 3 driver. And, well, that's actually a really big deal that it's – and I like that. And it's falling in line with all the other regionals and everything. But this is an actual FIA Formula 3 event, right? It counts as part of the points and towards the championship?
It does not count towards the championship, but it's officially a World Cup. In fact, we have the GT World Cup. So a lot of the guys that were in Shanghai yesterday, including GT LM Pro winner Kevin Estra, will be racing in GTs. We've got the Formula 3 World Cup, which is two races. First race counts towards your qualifying for the grid for the second race. And it's the World Championship. And then there is the World Touring Car Championship, which is TCR, but that is the final round of the World Touring Car Championship. It's basically Macau now is officially a World Championship kind of World Cup.
Well, I am disappointed that we only have one American, Logan Sargeant, because we've had, not that we've had a ton at every year, but I definitely wanted more, and I know that's such a great opportunity for, you know, Americans to come down there, and I mean, I know it's not like the Toyota Racing Series, but they can come down and get some good track time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Logan's been racing for Carlin in the UK, and he's a bit like Rossi. He left our shores or left American shores a few years ago, and he's been, plowing his furrow out there in Europe. And this is his first time at Macau, and they always say that because it's such a tough circuit, being a street circuit, that the first year is a sort of trial period. You learn the track, and then you go for it the second year, and I think that's going to be the case. Same true of Liam Lawson. There's quite a few F1 junior races here as well. We've got the Ferrari Academy represented by Kiwi Marcus Armstrong. You've got another F1 Academy driver, Robert Schwartzman, who is from Russia. He won the FIA F3 championship this year. And there's many others. And then there's guys like Dan Ticktum, and that's the big story of this weekend, is that Dan Ticktum, who won the race last year and the year before, is coming back to race a third time. And for his career, having been dropped by the Red Bull Formula One junior team, it's kind of make or break. So there's some really good stories up and down the grid, but just the one American, Logan Sargeant.
And, you know, I say that, I'm disappointed there's not more Americans, but it needs to be the right, you need to be at the right spot in your career. Like, I could see maybe some of the F3 guys, like Dakota Dickerson or Kyle Kirkwood, for example, having the chops to go to Macau, because you don't want to go there. That's not some place where you're really going to learn.
No, and it's very true. You're right. I mean, there's no question that Dakota Dickerson and Kyle Kirkwood could do it. The man most likely to be the next one in line will be Cameron Das, who's already over in Europe. And so look out for his name. But last, you know, I mean, Gustavo Menezes, who had another good result in Shanghai yesterday. Yep. He was here. As you know, Santino Ferrucci's raced here. Ryan Tavita has raced here. And Juan Manuel Correa, who sadly is still recovering from his injury, raced here as well. So there's been Americans over the years. And of course, looking further back, we've had some great Americans here, including, you know, including Price Cobb back in 1983. How about that?
Really? That's great. Good job on your research there, young man.
Thank you. I know. I spotted him last night and went, I'll give him a shout out.
Oh, that's great.
He's probably not listening. I saw that he's in Las Vegas this week for, I don't know, some little car, motorcycle, motorsport gathering.
Ah, so he's in the sister city in the United States to Macau, actually.
SEMA.
I know.
What's going on right
now? Yeah, there you go. There you go.
All righty, John.
I've got another good story for
you. Yeah, let's hear it.
Do you remember last year when you watched it, there was this horrific crash?
Sophia
Flores. Sophia Flores.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, she's back, and she's going to race. And
wow.
She's going to race.
Wonderful.
And she hasn't actually raced FIA F3, which is, if you like, that's another reason, by the way, that the Dakota Dickersons and the Kyle Kirkwoods, that car is effectively a regional F3 car,
right?
Whereas the FIA F3 car is effectively the old GP3 car. So there's DRS, it's a bit more powerful. Anyway, she did a test the other week. She wasn't doing anything too particularly strong, but she's in, and she really wants to come back and race it and kind of, you know, get the monkey off her back. And she's the only female driver. And I wish her luck. She's just 18 years of age. And I say power to her to come back after that amazing accident and be willing to, you know, to face the demons, as it were.
Yeah, that was probably the most horrific-looking crash of all of last year that I can think of, because she was going just like 175 miles an hour.
That's right.
When she crashed. It was crazy. But that's good for her to get back up on that horse and get back in. I forgot she's so young. I knew she was young, but I guess that would have made her 17 last year.
I'm giving Jonathan an assignment on something that I came across this weekend. So speaking of young drivers, there's one coming up. She's from Japan. She hits all of the big spots, and the name is Juju Noda.
I saw this.
She is 13 years old now, has already been in open-wheel Formula cars for 2 years. She has taken up moving and going to countries that will allow her to qualify and demonstrate her skills at this young age. And then she gets in the cars and she does phenomenal. She's got a racing history through her parents. But keep an eye out, Jonathan. You may find this Juju Noda, J-U-J-U-N-O-D-A. She's 13 years old.
So is her father Hideki Noda?
Exactly.
Ah,
see?
You're halfway there.
Good for you, Mr. Green.
Yeah, so therefore she's just 13, so she's too young for Macau. But I tell you what, I will ask the up-and-coming F1 Honda Red Bull Junior, that is Yuki Tsunoda. I'll ask him what she's all about.
Well, so far rumors are that she is the youngest female to be as qualified as she is and have demonstrated all of the success she has in Formula cars coming up. Really pushing the limits, as we saw Max Verstappen, of age limits.
Wow, that is really cool. Well, I'll definitely do some research on her, because that's the first I've heard. Hey, you know, we joke about my commentary on the GT race about the mayhem.
Yeah.
Well, it will be in action again, and I have to say, it's not a bigger field, but that's not a problem. It's about 20 cars, but my word, they've got some skill. I mean, we've got Earl Bamber, who's raced, of course, with More Speed and in America has won Le Mans. We've got Kevin Estre, who was winner at Shanghai this weekend. We've got Andy Priot, who won his third World Touring Car Chip. He's not doing GTs. He's doing World Touring Cars again. But we've got some really good pedalers. And how about this for the GT class? I know the movie Ferrari versus Ford is coming out this week. But all the cars in GT are German. So they're either Audi, Mercedes. What's the other one?
Porsche.
Probably
Porsche.
Yeah.
I think that was a jab at me. It's all right. I can take it.
Yeah. Just check it.
Well, you know,
that's
very cool. And that's really exciting racing to watch. I remember I watched that big giant crash. I watched it live. I was streaming it and it was on at like, I want to say about 8 o'clock here on a Friday night. So I guess it'd be this coming Friday night, the equivalent. And, and it was a great stream. I was casting it to the TV and I think didn't you say they're getting better and better every year at the streaming technology? And it's really good. It's easy to watch. I think you can watch it either on the FIA website or on the Macau Grand Prix. I think just Google it and it'll come up.
Yeah, I will send you the link and we'll tweet it out this week. But that's why I get here so early, because we actually stream all the practice sessions.
Nice.
And so we have somewhere in the region of 7 races, including a motorcycle race. So we've got 2 local races, 1 a GT race and 1 a touring car race. We've got the World Touring Car Championship, GT Championship, F3, and the Motorcycle Grand Prix. And we will be starting from Thursday all the way through Sunday. You can watch it all live for nothing.
All right,
cats and
very
dogs
cool.
Living together. Everybody's there except
all right,
us.
Well, we're out of time, boys. Jonathan, thanks for calling us up. Man, we had the best connection we've ever had from Macau. It's awesome.
There you go.
All right, well, don't forget, we'll be back on the Formula One trail next weekend. Go to our website, speedcitybroadcast.com, to find out where to listen to our national pre-race and post-race shows. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in. I want to thank James Davison for coming on. Awesome. And we will talk to you next week.
Ciao, y'all.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.